Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Robin Christensen with Visible Secrets, Invisible Power. It's about how climate change and the technology behind messing with the climate, let's put it that way, is destroying the planet and threatening the planet. And most or many do not even know that this technology really exists because we're so effectively programmed that it's a hoax. So in other words, when we see lines in the sky made by jets going from horizon to horizon, sometimes even in a crisscross grid, that's just condensation. You know, we're led to believe that. Or if we say the word chemtrails, that's just a hoax. So why is this on a station for religion and the Bible? Because this is a spiritual struggle, in my opinion. My life experience tells me that if indeed weather manipulation is real and environmental groups don't even talk about it and they dismiss it, something's wrong. So as I've learned, you know, one can go to college and be brilliant. And as Tesla said, the great scientist Tesla said, one can think deeply and not think clearly. So if you think clearly, you think you're sane. But if you think deeply, you may be sane, but you also may be insane. So what's developed naturally as humankind has developed more and more tools at an accelerating pace, and we're learning more about the secrets of nature and so forth. We're far from understanding the bigger picture, the broad horizon, and it's evident in this crazy technology. So it's incredible that we can even manipulate the weather, but it's understandable that, for example, a hurricane. How can we stop a hurricane from killing people or injuring people? So back in the 40s, they were already playing with hurricanes with silver iodide. They were, you know, sending planes up, spraying these chemicals in the air. And sure enough, they found that it affected very little chemical could affect a very powerful weather pattern. That was kind of the beginning. And I could go on and on. But I want to get to the precept as well. And the precept for today is natural law and liberty from psychopath to life path. So the psychopath portion is best stated on every opening of Dane Wigington's geoengineeringwatch.org. And that is, I'm saying to a graduation ceremony, I believe, of military cadets that he who controls the weather controls the world. Kind of a raving, maniacal sound to his voice. You know, are we here to control the weather, to control the world? You know, I hope people who heard that speech at the time were thought, oh, what's going on? I mean, is that what we're here for? And granted, it is, you know, if we can save people's lives from hurricanes, you know, it's understandable. But unfortunately, as with most technologies, they have dual purposes. They can be good, they can be bad. On the bad side, the overall impact of climate engineering, which is a combination of spraying nanoparticles of polymers, metallic nanoparticles, and other chemicals in the sky to seed clouds. And once the clouds are seeded, the invisible power of microwave towers and ionospheric heaters, very powerful instrument. These are powerful enough to change the course of the jet stream, for example. So when we can steer and move the weather, we can weaken it, we can augment, you know, make it a hurricane stronger, or we can steer a hurricane. So given the decades, with all the dark money that's out there, the trillions of dollars unaccounted for, you know, in the Office of Management and Budget, this technology has progressed to a point where the far-reaching impact, it's tied in everything we do, including this pandemic. So that's part of my motivation for today's Natural Law and Liberty, From Psychopath to Life Path. I've illustrated a psychopathic statement by President former Vice President Johnson, who later became president. But the reason I use natural law is because there are people throughout history, enlightened human beings, who have stated that, you know, if we live in accordance with the laws of nature, that's what's most important. So are we here to manipulate, control, program the weather, or are we here to let the weather do its own technology, a technology that's far beyond our comprehension? The ultimate question of our times, in my opinion. So I discovered discussion by Marcus Aurelius, the former emperor of the empire, you know, the Italian Roman Empire. And he was a very profound leader in his insights and understanding of natural law. He was a Stoic. And my understanding of a Stoic, I could read in my notes, but having read a little bit about Stoicism and Marcus Aurelius, he's basically saying that, you know, we have to keep in touch with our emotions and desires. Stoicism is allowing those emotions, but being very objective, being very centered, and letting nature dictate how we respond responsibly and in a balanced manner. It's kind of hard to explain on the spur, but let me just, instead of going into that precept, natural law and liberty, the other person I want to discuss is Chuck Baldwin, former presidential candidate, a very successful minister who has, you know, a large congregation, who took courageous steps to contest the idea of what the Israeli government was doing. You know, in his heart he looked, even though he was from the moral majority in his history, and he had these big crowds in his church, he realized that that political direction to support the state of Israel, it didn't sit with him. And the more he studied, the more he realized that, you know, the government of Israel is really a sham, a very destructive government, and very well connected to the United States. Of course, our taxpayers' money goes there to support many military weapons in their defense. And in short, to Chuck, it became such an insanity that, you know, he started exploring why this loss of liberty is happening. So I'll go into that a little bit too. So I'll just read the precept as I had it from my email. So former presidential candidate and longtime minister Chuck Baldwin has been discussed in recent blogs. What a nice surprise to discover a second interview between Chuck and Dane Wigington, director of geoengineeringwatch.org. I will talk more about how we can take the leap from a poem or a prayer to action's traction to bridge the regret. As in the last blog, if 99% of the herd is heading toward the cliff, allowing abrupt climate collapse, does that mean 1% of the herd can't change the course of the whole herd? Absolutely not. Though we are in the most epic fight of our survival and the survival of this life-giving planet as a whole, remember, the enlightened 1% have all been members of the 99% before they awakened to act with courage and patriotism. We're all in this together. We can't play God. We belong to God. God does not belong to us. We belong to Earth. Earth does not belong to us. The last portion, statement by Daniel Quinn, the award-winning book Ishmael that he wrote. So again, I'll continue with some comments on Stoicism and natural law, a synthesis of historic sages hinted in my last poem, a saying of Christ forbidden from the Bible, hidden by the power structure of those times, and the conclusion, my belief that humans are not evil by nature, but only when fear-mongers, hyper-predators, fool them. And again, I'll continue with a review on Dane and Chuck's interview. What does liberty mean in the context of American history of the Christian church? The American population is potentially the greatest counterbalancing force to face the gathering storm that this nation has been number one in creating. And the American bridge, Dane Wigington, or two sides of the same coin. That's a little obsequious there. American bridge is a Democratic Party PAC that I was surprised just to note that I've been talking all about the bridge, kind of making my own party, the bridge party, or a movement. And here the Democratic Party is already using the name bridge. I was disappointed. And then I wanted just to note a video I listened to with a peppy and courageous young New Zealand alternative media star who shares good humor and compassion in spite of imminent extinction. Here's a fellow that understands that we're spiraling into a rapid fall down, abrupt climate collapse, extinction that could wipe us out, but maintains this levity, this joking, this ability to make a difference but have fun while he's doing it. And he was, whereas Dane Wigington had stated during the interview that he said, Vinny, you know, I don't laugh very much. You're one of the few people that can make me laugh. And, you know, I heard a few laughs from Dane during the interview. And, of course, Dane is not in a laughing mood. He's basically, it seems sometimes he's holding the planet on his shoulders. He's done incredible things, 12 hours a day. He's done 268 radio programs without one absence, each an hour long, every Saturday, never missing once. That's beyond human. I don't know how the guy is able to keep up with what he does, trying to get this biggest piece of the puzzle out to humanity so we can act and transform. And I have a little rhyme I make. It's transformation of procrastination. In short, there's enough of us here in this country who are comfortable, and we can get into the political bread and circus, political theater that's going on. You know, it's a circus, basically. And that is in my opinion. I don't want to offend people. It's for a good cause. You know, when you get involved in politics, when you have an opinion, It's a way to make a difference. I have no problem with that. But that's in part while I'm looking at alternatives to the Republican and Democratic Party, because, you know, as Dane Wigington has said, it's two sides of a fascist coin. That's my way of putting it. But fascism is ever present. So to illustrate that, let me just go on with the final. I just want to continue also in this hour with a global alert news update and also some personal actions that I've been doing to put action to traction from a poem or a prayer. So, but let me open with the best summation I've seen on that includes the sense of natural law. It includes a sense of liberty. It's a quote from Russell Means. Russell Means was a co-founder of the American Indian Movement. He spent some time in Minnesota, where I live, and amazing person in that he was an artist, he was an actor, he was an activist, needless to say. He was part of the Wounded Knee effort. He was part of a schism where the American Indian Movement split. He went in one direction, the Bellecourt brothers were in another direction. But he had a good education. I think part of the program is to, when they were getting Indians or Native Americans off reservations and into jobs, Russell Means was one of those individuals who was precocious. He was able to learn and educate himself and be very fluent in the English language and had an intellect and a way with words, no doubt, a way with words. So I'll share this quote, Russell Means. The most recent era of human history, the last 13,000 years of relative geological stability, has been defined by unsustainable philosophies of the few controlling the many in a litany of metastable. Metastable means is like metastasize when a cancer goes bad. Of metastable expanding vortices, the harvesting of conflict and competition sown among mankind. Every empire and mitre, and a mitre is like a headdress, a crown, you know, something that symbolizes that you're a leader in an empire. Every empire and mitre of this era rises and falls under the same principle, each in turn becoming the enemy it vanquished. That vortex of centralized power in all its clever and glittering eminence, but persistently devolving into military economy and fervent rationalization, ultimately consumed by vengeance and greed and designed to usurp its sustenance from others, whose delicate algorithms of life and sublime purpose are not spent upon resistance to such a principle. One of these others is the planet itself, quite soon to be discovered by all. The creaking branch we are sitting upon, in this iteration of feckless arrogance, so many turn and blame the earth and sun for the hemlock that man has resolutely served himself. But is it not so much greater a miracle and pretext beyond all our achievements in the flesh that we have come to exist here together in the first place than the simple intermission of quieting our calculated ambitions for a moment to cherish that miracle in each person and creature, blade of grass and grain of sand? Isn't that something? I just love that, the way he says that, because let's take that last part, the intermission of quieting. You know, in some ways, people say the pandemic has been healthy because we have to quiet ourselves. And you know, things that, for example, I enjoyed going to soccer games at our new stadium in downtown, in the midway of St. Paul. that was something I could do. I could look forward with my wife to get, that was our time together to have a great time and watch the game and cheer. Well, that's not there anymore. But at the same time, that's a very consumptive habit where we can be at home now and do other things that aren't so impactful. Because, you know, you think of one soccer game where all these hundreds of cars and people are out and about, including the concessionaires that have to sell their products and all the beer that's chugged down. And it's a kind of a consumptive orgy in a way. But again, not to put sports down, there may be a time for that. But at the same time, the pandemic, though, it's caused some shifts in the way we look at ourselves. At the same time, I have to say, I'm appalled when I see on TV everybody wearing masks, that we can't live this way. And I will point out that Kim Iverson, I've followed her as an alternative media host, and she's watched closely Sweden. Sweden did not wear masks. They had social distance. They used scientific principles of being reasoned, objective, pragmatic in their approach. And lo and behold, even though their rate of the illness spiked a little bit, they're far and away the best in Europe. They have the lowest death rate, the lowest incidence of this illness. And guess what? There is such a thing as it's the herd. In other words, herd immunity. That's the word I'm looking for. If you spread it out and you hide at home, and you're unhappy and stressed, and you got other health problems like obesity or emphysema or whatever, yes, this disease will hit that hard. It's a bad flu. But a bad flu, quite in general, is not a cause of death. It's the related things that cause the death. Or if you're old and get a bad flu, of course, that could easily cause death. So one can criticize and point fingers forever on this pandemic, but I think it's very pertinent to note that when you just follow the government, that the security blanket that the government gives you becomes more important than your own liberty, we've got a problem. And that's part of what this precept is about today, is a discussion with Chuck Baldwin on what liberty means. So I finally covered everything in a short way that I'd like to cover, and I know I'll not get to it all. Let me get to a little bit about Stoicism, because I thought it was interesting. You know, this is way back when people had some insights. It was a Mideast Western civilization. It was founded by Zeno of Citium in the 3rd century before Christ. Personal ethics informed by its system of logic and its views of the natural world is a path to blessedness by accepting the moment as it presents itself, by using one's mind to understand the world and to do one's part in nature's plan, and by working together and treating others fairly and justly. Virtue is the only good. Health, wealth, and pleasure are not good or bad in themselves, but have value as material for virtue to act upon. Thus, emotionally resilient to misfortune. And believe you me, when I'm doing a project and I lost my hammer or something, I get really mad. But you got to watch those things. They get the best of you. Should aim to maintain a will that is in accordance with nature, not about what a person says, but how they behave. Up to 3rd century AD, Stoicism flourished, Roman/Greek world. Emperor Marcus Aurelius was an exemplar of this era, a favorite of Dane Wigington. Liberty, it's the state of being free within society, from oppressive restrictions imposed by authority on one's way of life, behavior, or political view. Freedom is an internal construct. It's an attitude about your circumstance. An external construct free within society from oppressive restrictions, life, behavior, political views. Liberty is the ability to do as one pleases. Thus, liberty entails the responsible use of freedom under the rule of law without depriving anyone else of their freedom. Freedom is a broader term that allows total lack of restraint. So there you have, you know, a brief overview of that. I'm going to go into that interview with Dane and Chuck Baldwin. And I'll start with some historic notes that they were talking about. It's really interesting because churches were a heck of a lot different than they are today. I'll explain why in a bit. But Jonas Clark was the pastor of the Lexington Green Church. And a decade previous to the Revolutionary War, you know, he was a pastor, a very well-known pastor. He gave refuge to John Adams in 1775 and John Hancock, both those leaders. He gave refuge with his church. They were on the run from the British, and Dawes and Revere warned, of course, Paul Revere being famous for the warnings of that the British were coming. So that's when Hancock and Adams, they went to the woods with 17 church members, if I'm mistaken, to oversee their safety. And they waited with guns, and these were the Minutemen. And the shot around the world, the first shot of the Revolutionary War happened right about that time, I guess. Why we don't have spiritual resistance to tyrannical order. Preachers are silent. This is Chuck's opinion, Chuck Baldwin's opinion. As he discovered about liberty, we became a 501c3 organization. Churches became that way during the 60s. It was Senator Lyndon Johnson that wanted to get that 501c3 status. It was 1954, and he was senator, liberal legislator. There's a lot of Texans in his state that opposed this change, but the 501c3 became part of the Internal Revenue tax immunity. So it became... instead, the churches now were no longer independent, separate authority, where they had no jurisdiction. So this 501c3, yes, the taxes aren't there, but at the same time, the restrictions are. So that's a very significant step in time. And I should say this too. Jonas Clark and the membership of his church during these times, all his members of the church took to their guns to defend themselves. A 501c wouldn't let you do anything like that. I can't resist that little plug, but, you know, times were different. And so... just let me pause a little bit here, and I will get... So what he's saying is, does Scripture require us to be stewards of creation? Faith without works is dead. And that's a problem that the 501c3 has. We go along to get along and think happy. You know, Dane Wigington says that. But, for example, a 501c3, you are not in a church ever going to talk about 9/11, about in many blogs, 9/11 is a false flag event. I'm totally convinced with all my heart and soul that, you know, even though for years I never looked into it, when I finally did an objective investigation, finally got the courage to say, this is ugly, but, you know, I'm going to look at the ugly and see what, if I can find, you know, where the truth lies, because it had always been kind of a clouded mystery, and a dark cloud that, you know, nobody wants to look at. But again, how does a building that's not even hit by a plane and supposedly there's some small office fire from the debris, and how does that collapse a building that's almost the size of a football field in 7 seconds? How is it that Alaska University spent 4 years and they've proven step by step against the NIST report that indeed it was controlled demolition that had to bring down the building? Their explanation of a fire did not fit anywhere. It doesn't fit any physics, any science. If you look at it step by step, you've got the best engineering sources to back up the physics, you know, the basic 1 + 1 = 2. It's all known. So I diverge a little bit here, but again, Chuck found that he was not going to be restricted by freedom of speech. You know, this liberty of being able to talk about what comes from your soul, what came from his soul about the evils of the Israeli government, 9/11, you know, this helps him break away from 501c3 status. So he went to private. He became a privately funded church. I've said that in other blogs. So yes, it was courageous for him. He lost tons of members. He had 35,000 members. He went out to west to Montana to set up a new church. And yes, he's thriving now. But you know, he had to lose a lot of friendship. He had to face a lot of disapproval to do this. But Chuck is no small timer. He's been a presidential candidate for the Liberty Party or the Tea Party of the United States. And that can be misconstrued too. It was Senator Ron Paul that gave the blessing to Chuck Baldwin to do this. But again, Ron Paul, you know, he's run for president too, and he gets knocked right out because he's not part of the establishment, not part of the so-called fascist double coin of Republican-Democrat establishment, where the reason I use the word fascism, because just as Russell Means said in his quote, you know, that the few rule the many. And it just, these vortexes become bigger and bigger. And, you know, the vanquished side becomes the enemy itself. In other words, if the United States conquered England, they, for whatever reason, they didn't like, and we conquered Germany in the World War II, well, isn't it interesting that with Project Paperclip, for example, we're recruiting hundreds and hundreds of Nazi scientists into the United States to help us with technologies? So it's a double-edged sword. It might have been good intention to think that these recruits that came in weren't the kind that were the killers of the war, but at the same time, think of Lyme disease, for example. Well, they were experimenting with biowarfare in Germany in World War II, and now they're bringing somebody that is with experimenting in a lab with ticks. And the outbreak of Lyme disease is historically, it's found in this area where that scientist was. The lab that he was working in, the outbreak of Lyme's disease came from that point. So that's an example where, you know, you can always state good intentions, but in the end, those intentions turn to be evil. All in this competitive world that Russell Means says, this principle of competition, being at war And just like Daniel Quinn says, why are we at war with the earth? We should be in accord with nature. Nature is not an enemy that we're above, to stand above other species. We're not here to put nature in order. We're here to, as Marcus Aurelius says, to understand nature and act accordingly in a way that is best for not only people, but for creatures. And I can't help but share just a little aside here. You know, it was interesting. I saw a tape. And again, this is about natural law. My daughter, I shared it with her this morning. I've got a cat, and we've got an opossum and a raccoon in our neighborhood. We're a little concerned. And we saw a YouTube video with three of three type of creatures all together struggling with food. The cat had food, and there was also some pebbles and stuff, food pebbles on the floor near the cat's dish. What was interesting is when these three creatures encounter each other, well, they can't talk, but their body expressions are amazing. They negotiate. They negotiate for food. They see how close they can come to each other, and they might snap or a claw might go after them. But they take these postures, like the raccoon just balls up kind of in a defensive posture, you know, not offensive. It's not going to attack. It just kind of balls up, you know, like what's the best location I can be in so you can eat and I can eat. So it's just amazing how animals, if you watch them, they communicate in a way where they negotiate the best circumstance for each. So the cat would be more aggressive because it's its food bowl, its residence that these animals were intruding in. But even the cat, to a certain point, that if the animal is far enough away in that porch area, then the cat won't worry about it. And maybe that animal, you know, finds some pebbles on the floor, the cat doesn't care. So, you know, creatures work out things in nature, and it's worth observing and closely how this outstanding diversity, this once thriving planet, no wonder why it was such a thriving garden of paradise, Garden of Eden, because with such diversity, we each had our niche, each creature, including humans. And now there's nothing wrong with humans developing more tools, more abilities, but at some point, we have to realize Earth is not a physics lab. We can't just think deeply. We can't be an expert in one area. We have to have a sense of the impact of our tools, of our so often tools that become weapons, like a plowshare turns to a sword. A plowshare turns to a bullet, and on and on. And even the poisoning of the skies. I think it's interesting that the poisons, metallic, the nanoparticles of aluminum, barium, strontium, and so forth, those are metals. So ever since the invention of the use of metals, taking them from ores and dirt and rock and turning them into a tool, now we have nanoparticles, metals in nanoparticle form. We have metals in nuclear form. We have metals in sword form. We have metals that make buildings, bridges. So at what point is the balance lost? At what point is the mass lost? And the greatest loser of mass is climate engineering. So we're losing our liberties very quickly with abrupt climate collapse, not only the climate engineering tool, but the thousands of other tools that we have, including cell phones, where, you know, you consider the resources it takes to make all these technologies like cell phones. there's, you know, a lot of toxic chemicals that are not good for any creature that have to be used and can't just easily be disposed of in a safe manner or leave an irretrievable mark on the land, like an ore pit. And then you get the erosion, the liquids that drain in, the pools that settle, the fracking. And, you know, one can throw up their arms helpless at times. But that's part of what is so inspiring with Chuck Baldwin's and Dane Wigington's interview is, I'll go on into that a little more, is that they don't give up. You know, we have convenience stores. We can get energy drinks. I get them. We can go home. We can look at our phone, just wander through the internet, can listen to a baseball game. You know, life is good as long as we're not desperate. But when most of the rest of the world is becoming desperate and we're still sitting here in first world countries, so tuned into the TV and the political bread and circus, we're not getting anywhere. And yet the climate and the earth is collapsing, as Dennis Means indicated. So Chuck lists three problems. He listed the 501c3, that it's a legal binder that where you lose your liberty and free speech. Problem two, another element is besides the 501c3 is men have itchy ears. Men pleasers, personal finance popularity, businessmen, CEOs, marketers, snake oil salesmen. It's the church of success. You know, money, how to make money, how to get a big congregation. You know, a pastor shouldn't care. A pastor is not a CEO, cheerleader. He's not there to increase finances and notoriety. So, you know, that's a very important point, I think, where sometimes in the religious communities, the church buildings, the great big edifices that are built, they're missing the point. So what's problem three? That's Romans chapter 13, the misconception. Chuck says, the chapter 13 says, we must comply to the government, according to Romans 13. Unlawful, unbiblical, tyrannical authority. No, you know, it's when we have unlawful, unbiblical, tyrannical authority of the present day, Romans 13, of course, doesn't apply. So that's another problem. And Dane in that interview said, you know, to get along, it's just not working. He felt the calling of conscience. Geoengineering ramifications are so broad. It connects to everything. And I have to say, I was just reading about how aerosols have been used so many times in so many ways to spread pathogens like viruses. How do they spread so fast like this pandemic? It just seems obvious to me that geoengineering has a huge role in this, especially when Bill Gates and the second leading geoengineer, I'm trying to think of his name, Ken Caldera, they work for each other. So what does that tell you? Ken Caldera has gone on record to say he's researched having jets spray pathogens on populations below as a means to fight an enemy. Well, are we the enemy, the American population? Is Bill Gates a eugenicist? Is Anthony Fauci a eugenicist? These are hard questions, and that could turn a lot of people off. I know I had a friend who looked upon Dr. Fauci as a hero, but a little research, and I think at some point people will start to realize that, you know, as Dennis Means said, those so few at the top where people like Dr. Fauci has been a prominent leader for decades, Henry Kissinger for decades, Bill Gates for decades. And yet, though Bill Gates, for example, has made great strides in the computer industry, what makes him a doctor? What makes him somebody, a pro-vaccine person? What makes him somebody to give $10 billion to the World Health Organization to basically buy it? That's fascism. So pardon me, but I just get a little angry. when somebody can come in and raise the shots or the vaccines, the dosage from 5 to 50, you know, that's obviously going to harm and injure people. And by the way, Dane's recent geoengineeringwatch.org global alert news, Spain, the volunteers in Spain were getting so sick from these tests of a vaccine, they quit. They were getting way too sick, way too dangerous. They are not finding a successful vaccine, and there never has been with coronavirus. So who knows? Maybe they're finding just a way to invent a vaccine that will kill off half the population. That's a stated goal in many ways. When somebody like Rockefeller says the ideal population on Earth would be 500,000. But there's a better way to limit the population, obviously, than climate engineering and purposely creating conditions that set for these massive fires. How these fires are ignited is not, you know, what Dan Wigington is concerned with. They will ignite. We know that there's increased lightning with electroconductive metallic particles in the sky that'll raise dry lightning incredibly to set fires. But when we have some political group setting fire as a blame for all these fires, oh, come on. Whatever the case, maybe direct energy is used to ignite some of these fires by the power structure, you know, those at the top that are secret in you know, in the dark. But the point of it is, if the forest is a tinderbox because of the ill health of the forest, it doesn't take much to start a super fire. To start a super fire, the one in Oregon created columns of smoke up to 50,000 feet high. So what does that accomplish? That smoke goes over the poles and temporarily, though as toxic as it could be for everybody, it does cool down the poles. That is the desperation of a power structure that is unwieldy and it's way off the mark. It's criminal insanity. But somehow, you know, we the population have let things come to pass this way. You know, I was going to find a saying by Jefferson about, you know, the eternal vigilance that's needed to keep our freedom. And we've obviously failed to a large degree. But this failure, who's to say it's wrong? Inevitably, all of us have to come to a point to realize that to survive, change is happening, spiraling us toward a complete extinction. It doesn't mean we can't change. It doesn't mean we can't have a radical departure from the way we live now. So with that, I've rambled on a little bit. I'm a little rusty for being at the blog, but I thank Brother Job and Sister Rhea for this opportunity. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've been doing, you know, in my personal actions. And I would like to be a little more organized in what I do, but I have family needs, which with these last warm days, I've spent a lot of hours, you know, doing outdoor projects on the house. So, but here's what I have been able to do. I've written some letters to alternative media personnel. And one of the main letters I want to get across for anybody listening to this point or later on finding this blog is that Dane Wigington has a tab called Engineering Wildfires. And he said that's perhaps the most effective 20-minute video he's put together of his many, many videos. And this is so important because consider a half a billion people, not a half a billion, half a million people have to be moved from their houses in the state of Oregon, if I understand the facts correctly. I'm quite sure I heard the word half a million people having to move away from these wildfires. You know, it's just incredible. What are people doing? How come? You know, we have to ask this question now. And climate engineering is the number one culprit, hands down. And that video will explain how climate engineering is destroying the ozone. So the trees burn from the top down. We get UV light that's off the charts that, you know, is frying bullfrogs out in the wilderness. Dane has a presentation where bullfrogs 3 feet from water, they have their fat, they're healthy, they haven't been touched by a predator, and they're just standing statues of dead frogs that, you know, right next to water in the mud. That's UV radiation. You know, I can't be 100% sure of that, but I know there are such things as ozone holes, and frogs being sensitive are immediately fried when the conditions are that bad. And given Northern California is a hub of climate engineering and it's had the ozone shred, it's had the poisons so, or the soil so poisoned that Dane Wigington can't even plant one tree. That what used to be his passion is rehabilitating the forest. Now he can't because the soil is so damaged from the metallic particles and chemicals that have been sprayed. So, and then climate engineering creates the weather whiplash. If weather moisture is taken from one place where nature intended it and put to another place where nature doesn't necessarily need it, you get drought and deluge. So when you get drought and deluge, you get less trees, you get less carbon fixation by the trees, you get less oxygen by all the trees, the shrubs, the plants, you get desert. You know, Northern California, as Dane has shown, there used to be a creek there, 70 inches of rain a year, and now the creek is gone. It's dry. It's very much like a desert where he lives, with the smell of smoke, silence in the woods when you walk through. And you don't hear the creatures because they're gone. And again, 70% now. It used to be 66%. Now the estimates are 70% of the wildlife is gone. So again, climate engineering with the ozone shredding, burning the tops of trees, the poison soils, destroying the bottom of the trees. Of course the trees burn. With the incendiary dust that covers all the foliage, and by the way, is a desiccant, it dries. When you put particles in the aerosols dry. It's a desiccant. Otherwise, this planet would have a chance to recover, and we would be having tons and tons more rain throughout the globe. We're getting less rain throughout the globe. The number one factor, climate engineering. So if there's anything being from Minnesota that I can't stand is when there's a severe drought. It's just something that's so sad. And I've been out west visiting my daughter long enough to know that, yeah, I went out jogging. I was breathing in smoke. Next thing you know, I was sick for a week. You know, my guard went way down. My immune system went way down. So with this pandemic, you know, things are just so complicated with fires and things that ensures that this pandemic is going to continue. And with no end in sight, again, a reminder that, you know, we do have some scientific analysis of how to do the right way, which Sweden has done. And of course, the mainstream media trumpets everything against Sweden, everything against medications, everything for some miracle vaccine that has yet to even exist, and a vaccine where we're taking shortcuts to get there. So never mind all the safety precautions that need to be taken. As Dane says, we're living in a sea of insanity. And so getting back, I've taken fact photo sheets to people in the post office. I've gotten to the point now where I just go to a break table and put them there, because if one can do a one or two sentence introduction to that fact and photo sheet and then give it to somebody versus a rant and rave for a long time, it's better off to be quick and just bypass people and let them look into it instead of impose on them all your words that you're so full of yourself that they feel that you're ignoring them. So it's important as an activist. And so I would like to do a lot more, but I've been with outdoor projects, and it's been a pleasure. It does take the world off your shoulders, but it's time to change. But the general message I'll bring is, yes, the Bible is sacred. I look forward to some more Gnostic gospel sharing of sayings of Christ, which to me are more sacred in many ways than some of the things in the Bible, whereas the Bible covers relationships, but not as effectively as the Gnostic gospel about the internal being. You know, we need to find out who we are. To be a Christian is one thing, but we need to be Christ. And by living in the moment and, you know, discovering some of that old philosophy of what sages knew is by being in the moment, being centered, whether it's Marcus Aurelius, Jesus Christ, or the Buddha, when we're centered and we turn our minds off, our minds that stress us, that make us worry, that in ways are helpful, but when we learn to calm and be centered, then our emotions, our desires don't get so far-fetched. And that's part of why, you know, Stoicism is so attractive, because we stay objective, yet we have emotions appropriately not to take over our mind. So I look at the time, and I'm sure it's about the time where I have to prepare to work. I will be taking a trip to Rush City, Minnesota very soon, so I'll need a little time to prepare. So bless you all. And may you fight for your liberty. And churches, remember, once they had guns, you know, they were an independent body. They weren't ruled by any restrictions of a 501c3 where there was any loss of free speech. They were a separate entity. So with that, I'll close the program, and I look forward to 2 weeks from now. Bless you all. And I'm not hearing the closing song, so I'll just hang up the phone for the moment, and if anybody's listening to this, pause. Just you can just turn the phone off. Okay, bye-bye.